Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Eric Metaxas. Eric is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Amazing Grace, William Wilberforce and the Heroic Campaign to End Slavery. He has written and appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, and the Atlantic Monthly, and he has appeared as a cultural commentator on CNN and Fox News. He's the founder and host of Socrates in the City, the acclaimed Manhattan speaker series on life, God, and other small topics. Eric lives in New York City with his wife and daughter. We're going inside the pages of Eric's book, Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy, published by Thomas Nelson. Welcome, Eric. This book, Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy, is phenomenal. What led you to the life of this extraordinary man?
Well, first of all, thank you. It means a lot to me when people are appreciating the book, as they seem to be. What led me to the life of Bonhoeffer is twofold. First of all, I really came to faith seriously in 1988, and I remember then the man who was sharing with me the gospel gave me a copy of The Cost of Discipleship, and I had never heard of Bonhoeffer. I said, "Who's this?" And he tells me, well, Bonhoeffer was a German pastor and theologian who got involved in the plot against Adolf Hitler because of his faith in Jesus Christ. He stood up to the Nazis and was eventually imprisoned by the Nazis and hanged, killed in 1945. And I was amazed at the story, at the witness of Bonhoeffer during these dark times. But I was also amazed that I'd never heard the story. I thought, what a crime. I mean, people need to know about this heroic life. There are so few wonderful examples like this from recent history. We need to know this story. And also, my mother is German. My mother grew up during this time. And my grandfather was killed during the war, a genuinely reluctant young soldier, as so many were. And I saw Bonhoeffer as a voice for those in Germany who could not say anything, who didn't know what to do. Bonhoeffer was a heroic, inspiring Christian voice in the middle of all that. So I was really so moved at that time, but that's 20 years ago. And I wrote a book on Wilberforce, and people kept asking me, who will you write about next after Amazing Grace came out? They thought, what's your next book? Who's your next biographical subject? And I thought, well, I don't really want to write another biography, but if I ever did, there's only one person who has captured my mind and heart the way Wilberforce did, and that's definitely Bonhoeffer. And one thing led to another, and of course I waded into the deep waters of Bonhoeffer and came out the other side. It was a lot bigger of a project than I thought it was, but I really feel that God led me ultimately to write this because I think we need to hear this story today.
It's beautifully written, Eric. I just have to say that right off the bat. I expected yet another biography, which in and of themselves is just fine. However, this one is just a compelling read, and especially even in its opening, you've taken that historical fact, blended so much of his own writing into this, but then gave it the drama of what his life truly was.
Well, again, thank you. It means so much to me that, you know, readers are appreciating this, because there is a lot here. I mean, you have the life of an incredibly extraordinary human being. I mean, Bonhoeffer was extremely bright and extremely devoted to Jesus Christ. And to have somebody so smart and so devoted to God living at a time when the evil was so evil, so clear, I really believe that God gives us these stories for our benefit. He gives us these stories to bless us, to encourage us, to inspire us. And I really believed in writing this that God was using me and is using me for the church, that we need to know who has gone before us to give us strength, to give us guidance. God uses people, obviously in the Catholic tradition, that's something that is understood, that the lives of the saints matter. It's not just about theology. It's not just about do this and don't do that. But the human beings who have given their lives over to serve God through Jesus Christ, they're the models that God has given us. Bonhoeffer is one of those. And there's so much to the story. As you said, there's theology, there's history, there's just so much. But I just felt that I could weave it all together, and I'm really thrilled that people are saying it's a great read. They can't put it down. No author could wish for much more than that, that people say that I couldn't put your book down. So thanks for enjoying it and for saying so on the air.
The life of Bonhoeffer. I was familiar with him only because, again, as you pointed out, he's a German Lutheran theologian and not someone necessarily that I would encounter his writings or his story, except that Archbishop Chaput of Denver has spoken of him often in his courageous stance and in his witness. Now, of course, witness is the term, the Latin for it is martyr.
Yeah.
And so he really is a witness to the just horrific occurrences of how devastating we can treat each other, especially, particularly as demonstrated in the 20th century.
Well, I again, thank you. I have to say that the Archbishop reviews the book for the current issue of First Things magazine, or at least it's going to be online later this week. And it's the most positive review that I have received yet, so that the Archbishop thought the book worthy of such accolades is incredibly thrilling to me. And I think that Bonhoeffer is a very compelling figure. I know that the Holy Father, Benedict, being a German, has a lot to say himself about Bonhoeffer. And we need to understand Bonhoeffer was an ecumenical figure in the best sense. He was a very pro-Catholic Protestant. He was somebody who gained very much himself from Catholic theology. He studied and wrote his book, Ethics, the last book of his life, while at Ettal Monastery, a Benedictine monastery in the Bavarian Alps. He borrowed natural law theology from the Catholic Church in order to write about natural law in his book, Ethics. There's not a tradition of that in Protestantism. And a trip to Rome in 1923 or 24, I forget, changed Bonhoeffer's life. He went there and for the first time in his life saw the church beyond the parochial borders of German Lutheranism. He went, he spent all of Holy Week at the Vatican worshiping at St. John's Lateran and at St. Peter's. He bought a missal. He followed it along. He went to services every day, more than once a day. And he was really taken as a German Lutheran at seeing the church universal, seeing people of every color and race on the altar at St. Peter's celebrating Palm Sunday Mass. It really moved him and changed him in his thinking about the church, and it caused him to ask the question, what is the church? He saw the church in a much broader ecumenical universal context after his experience in Rome, and that actually informed the rest of his life theologically and in other ways. That was the question he asked in both of his dissertations. I just did an interview with Catholic News Agency where they actually got me talking on the subject as well. But it's amazing how important this trip to Rome was for the 17-year-old Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So there's just an awful lot there.
It's interesting to speculate, given where his heart was leading him, and if he had been able to live and to experience the teachings that would come from Vatican II, and in particular from Gaudium et Spes, the church in the modern world, how that dialogue, at the very least, in his heart would have taken place. But his life took a different track. He chose a path that he wanted to walk with his German people, and in particular, those Jews.
It's extraordinary, really. I mean, Bonhoeffer, there's so much to him, there's never enough time really to talk about it, and that's one of the reasons the book is a long book. So I'm glad you found it compelling and couldn't put it down, because it is, you know, it's a big book, but the story, there's so much to the story. I mean, it's the story of Germany, it's the story of the rise of the Third Reich, it's the story of European Jewry. There's just a lot there, and Bonhoeffer was right in the middle of it. He was a key player. His family was an amazing family of heroic people, not all of them Christians, but I have to say his family played a very important role in shaping him, and I write about that at length in the book, just to see how the whole family was full of people like Bonhoeffer, not quite like him, but like him in the sense that they were willing to stand up to the evil at the time, and also able to see it to begin with, because so many Germans were unable to see it. But Bonhoeffer was recruited by a family member Danagni, who was his brother-in-law, to get involved in German military intelligence. Now, I should say that German military intelligence was the center of the conspiracy against Adolf Hitler, and Bonhoeffer's brother-in-law was one of the leaders in the conspiracy. And Bonhoeffer had been involved in giving them moral support as a pastor, giving them moral support in the conspiracy. But in 1939, of course, he decides to be recruited by his brother-in-law to actually work for German military intelligence and to get involved. But the whole family was involved. His brother, Klaus, was also part of this inner circle. So there's just so much. It's amazing. Obviously, many Catholics were involved. I should say that when Bonhoeffer was working for the Abwehr, a number of the people under whom he was working were not only Catholics, but were very prominent figures. Joseph Müller was a key figure, eventually also arrested by the Gestapo and treated horribly. But he traveled to the Vatican to contact the Holy Father deliberately on behalf of the German government and to say, will you serve as a broker? Now speaking, imagine, to the Pope at the time and asking him, will you broker things when we overthrow the Nazis? Will you help us? And so there were many, many prominent Christians in the Catholic tradition at that time that Bonhoeffer was working alongside of. So it's a pretty clear picture of the wider church versus the neo-pagan Nazis. And I go into that at length in the book as well, how violently, passionately anti-Christian the Nazis actually were. A lot of people don't realize that.
It really don't. It is a track of this particular telling of history, this rise of the Reich within the context of those German Christians who did feel the grace, the need to be able to speak out when others could not. And especially in his role in that leadership as a pastor, he felt that he had no other choice. What is the saying again, Eric, that he so famously known for, that about remaining silent in the face of evil?
Yeah, it's on the jacket flap of my book. He says that silence in the face of evil is evil. Not to speak is to speak, not to act is to act. It's an amazing thing. Bonhoeffer is this fountain of quotable quotes. I mean, he reminds mm-hmm. me of Chesterton in that way, that he writes in a way that immediately you want to engrave it on a wall someplace in stone. That's the most famous, at least I shouldn't say it's the most famous, it's one of the most famous of his many quotable quotes from that period. But he saw very clearly what they were up against, and he knew that as a Christian specifically, to be silent was to be complicit with the satanic evil of the Third Reich. That's a bold thing, and there were very few Christians who saw that. He was really desperately trying to wake up, especially the Lutheran Church in Germany, to understand that if they don't stand up now and declare what they believe and how they cannot have a part in what the Nazis are doing, if they don't do that, it'll be too late. And of course, it was eventually too late.
The courage that it took for him to return to Germany in the face of all this. He knew at one point he had traveled to America, had the opportunity to stay in America, and chose to go back to Germany to stand before this, can we call it a Leviathan of evil?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing. Bonhoeffer was a man led by God, and I think that we have to understand that, you know, those who are truly led by God do not have fear, because the Bible says, you know, perfect love casts out all fear. Bonhoeffer knew the Savior, and all he wanted to know is, what is God calling me to do? And Bonhoeffer travels to America in 1939, ostensibly to escape the coming war and the horrors of the war, not really in a selfish way, but thinking that this is the most logical thing for me to do, for me to preserve myself while this tidal wave comes, and then when it's over, I'll be able to pick up the pieces and go back. But he comes to America, and no sooner does he really get off the boat than he knows God is calling him to return. And he was very prayerful. In my book, really for the first time, I tell the full story of his thought process and how he's reading the scriptures every day and praying. He had this habit. It's the Latin term is lectio divina. He's really asking God to speak to him through the scripture about what to do. And as he's praying, And I write about this in this chapter. He feels very clearly God is calling him back. So he does go back, not even sure what he's going to do when he gets back, but knowing that God is calling him back. And when he does come back, he feels led to get involved in the wider conspiracy in an official capacity, which he hadn't done before. And that was 1939-1940, when his brother-in-law hires him to be a member of German military intelligence. It's fascinating to think that this brilliant academic and theologian and pastor becomes a double agent inside the Third Reich. It's an amazing story just on that level.
Also, a good part of the book talks about that period in his life where he does become sequestered. They end up taking him in. And the fact that you still have the letters and his writings to be able to reflect on all that, that is also very provocative reading.
Yeah, he was arrested. In fact, he just before he's arrested, he gets engaged. And if you read the book, obviously mm-hmm. you know that. But it's just an incredible story that he never thought he'd marry, because he really felt God has a call on my life, and I'm just going to serve God during this incredibly turbulent time and probably die or whatever. He really didn't think of himself as somebody who would be married. But he falls in love and gets engaged, and for the first time ever in this book, that story is told, and I'm humbled to think that I had that honor. But it's the first big book on Bonhoeffer in over 40 years, so it really is the first time that story is told. And these letters between him and his fiance while he's in prison, it's an incredible story. But to think that he was arrested in 1943 just as he's getting engaged, and that she was able to visit him in prison about once a month, but what a difficult thing that was for her. She was a younger woman. And to see his thought process, to be able to have these letters, the letters were buried, many of them, in a gas mask canister in his backyard. I was just in his backyard 10 days ago in Berlin. I'm, of course, in New York now where I live, but I was just in Berlin in that backyard where that canister was buried. To think that those letters have been preserved for us to read, and obviously you can read most of them in my book, but it really, it is incredible to see his process and to see how thoughtful and prayerful he was even in prison during this time. He was imprisoned from April of 43 until his death in April of 45.
Now for an Inside the Pages excerpt from Eric Metaxas's Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy. 19th December 1944. My dearest Maria, I am so glad to be able to write to you a Christmas letter and to be able, through you, to convey my love to my parents and my brothers and sisters, to thank you all. Our homes will be very quiet at this time, but I have often found that the quieter my surroundings, the more vividly I sense my connection with you all. It's as if, in solitude, the soul develops organs of which we're hardly aware in everyday life. So I haven't, for an instant, felt lonely and forlorn. You yourself, my parents, all of you, including my friends and students in active service, are my constant companions. Your prayers and kind thoughts, passages from the Bible, long forgotten conversations, pieces of music, books, are all invested with life and reality as never before. I live in a great unseen realm of whose real existence I am in no doubt. The old children's song about the angels says, two to cover me, two to wake me. And today, we grown-ups are no less in need than children of preservation, night and morning, by kindly unseen powers. So you mustn't think I'm unhappy. Anyway, what do happiness and unhappiness mean? They depend so little on circumstances and so much more on what goes on inside us. I am thankful every day to have you, you and all of you, and that makes me happy and cheerful. An Inside the Pages excerpt from Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy by Eric Metaxas. And now back to our conversation with Eric Metaxas. I have to ask you, since we began the discussion, what happened to Maria? Do we know that Maria, of course, is the fiance who stood by him in this just horrific situation?
Yeah, that's one of the few regrets I actually have about the book, is that I didn't get into that more. Maria obviously was very broken when she learned of Bonhoeffer's death. Basically, she moves to the United States. She's only about 20 at that time, 21, 22, I think, and there moves, goes to Bryn Mawr in Massachusetts and settles in Massachusetts. She was married twice and divorced twice, sadly. Mm-hmm. And she actually died at age 52 of cancer. That was in 1977. It's an amazing thing to think that she died so young. Mm-hmm. She preserved the letters between herself and Bonhoeffer and gave them to her elder sister, Ruth Alice von Bismarck, whom I had the great privilege to spend an afternoon with in Hamburg 2 years ago. She is in her late 80s, and she compiled the letters in a book called Love Letters from Cell 92, and that's the primary source that I used in my telling of the story. And it is just, it's an amazing and a moving part of the larger story that he was in love and engaged to this woman.
She sounds as though yet another victim of the atrocities of the 20th century.
And of course, there are so many. As I said earlier, my mother lived through this period. She lost her father. And so many Germans, almost every single German, suffered in one way or another. Those are stories we often don't hear. I dedicate the book to my grandfather, after whom I'm named, Eric Cragen, and it really is, it's moving for me to think that Bonhoeffer was a voice for those who couldn't speak during this time, because there were all kinds of victims, and there are victims today. I think that there are Germans today who even weren't alive during this period who bear a wound from that period. It was just such a black, evil time in history, and it did such damage to the nation of Germany. The book will be published in German next year in Germany. I just met with the German publishers a week ago when I was in Germany, and I'm thrilled to think that the book will be out in German. I really think that Germans need to know this story, and that it'll help them deal with the larger story of what happened to Germany in the 20th century.
Now, throughout the last generation or two, there have been many who have tried to take Bonhoeffer's writing and kind of twist it to their own means. Is that something that you've encountered in your research or since the book has been out?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the biggest things about this book, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but if people go to my website, they can read more about it. It's just my name. It's ericmetaxas.com. But at ericmetaxas.com, they can find links to some of the stuff we're talking about. But the big thing is that theological liberals have tried to paint a Bonhoeffer in their own image, and they've cherry-picked certain facts and twisted things, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, but his legacy has been hopelessly muddied and tangled. And I think that maybe the most important thing about my book, or one of the most important things, is that it clarifies what has been so confused. Bonhoeffer was a devout, theologically orthodox Christian right to the very end of his life. He's sometimes portrayed as somebody who went theologically fuzzy toward the end. That is absolutely not true, and we can prove that it's not true. You don't have to take my word for it. Just read the facts. But at the end of his life, he used a phrase called religionless Christianity, and a lot of humanists and a lot of atheists have seized on this to try to paint a portrait of Bonhoeffer that says that he's a post-Christian, that he's just a humanist and not a Christian. That is, as I say, absolutely not true. By religionless Christianity, what Bonhoeffer meant, of course, and if you read the book and you read the wider context of his life, it's very obvious that he was talking about a Christianity that is not merely dead religion, not mere church-going, but that is a robust, devoted life of obedience to Jesus Christ. He saw that the German church had failed and that it had been religion, mere religion, and that the life of Christ and the lordship of Christ had been sacrificed. It was not something that they saw as over all of their lives, but it was this small religious sphere. And Bonhoeffer says, we've got to have a Christianity where Jesus is Lord over everything. That's the only thing that can stand against satanic evil, and that is clearly something that did not happen during this time. And he was ruminating in a letter to his best friend, Eberhard Baetke, about this, and he refers to it as, we need a religionless Christianity, a real Christianity. That has been taken out of context, and people have run fast and far with that, and it's really taken 5 or 6 decades until now, I think, to truly set the record straight. And believe me, it isn't hard to do when you look at the facts. So I'm really glad that in my book I can just lay out the facts and people can decide for themselves. It's pretty obvious. It's actually shockingly obvious, and I was myself very surprised to see how clear that is.
I don't think anybody should be daunted by the size of the book. If anything, you should be excited that it's as big, because you will not want to put it down. You'll go through it too quickly, and you'll have to go back and reread it and reread it. It's just a wonderful, wonderful work. Any final thoughts, Eric?
Well, just that I think that the life of Bonhoeffer is, when you live a life in obedience to Jesus Christ the way he did unto the end, God uses that, and God wants to use all our lives to bless others. And the life of Bonhoeffer, the story of Bonhoeffer, blesses us. If he hadn't lived that way, there would be no book. There would be nothing like what I've written. But the story of his life is a story which I know will draw people closer to Jesus Christ. And what more can you ask from a life? What mm-hmm. could any of us ask from our own lives? And so I really think that it's exciting for me to think that the work of God will be done as people are reading this book and seeing this life. It will inspire people to draw closer to God. Nothing could make me happier, and it's just a huge privilege for me to be able to write a book about his life. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity and grateful to have this time with you. So thank you so much.
Well, Eric Metaxas, it's been wonderful having you with us, and I can't wait for the next one. It just gets better and better.
Thank you.
We've been going inside the pages of Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy, by Eric Metaxas. Eric's work can be found at ericmetaxas.com. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, please visit www.insidethepages.com. I'm Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.